Hi everyone, and welcome back to Conscious Fitness Divine Body. Well, tonight I have a little surprise for all of you who were here last week and learned a little bit more about Myelo Decade and the tarot cards. And for those who were not there, then welcome back to the show to find out a little bit about the tarot card and a little bit more. Last time we were... We learn a little bit more about what is the modern magician and how actually we can interact with the magic of who we are and how the tarot card, the thoughts tarot card, can actually be a tool for transformation and to help one quest to transformation and to awakening a little bit more. And so for that, like I was saying last time, we had one of the greatest magicians of our time today. It's Lon Myelo Decade. And amongst all the books that he has written about the Thought Tarot, one that I really, really enjoyed was the Understanding the Aleister Crowley's Thought Tarot, because it was so... So understandable for a beginner like me, and so understandable like at first. It was first glance and a lot of things that seemed very mysterious and secret that suddenly Lon has just brought them into a third dimension that made it so easier to grasp. So because it was a heavy subject topic that we overlooked last time, we both felt compelled to dive into it a little bit more. And so for all of you who are interested in knowing more about the mystery behind maybe each card and how it relates to the Kabbalah and the Tree of Life, then welcome back, because that's, you are at the right place, the right time. We're going to do that right now. So, good evening, Lon. How are you there?
Yes, I am. Thanks all for having
right.
me back.
Do you have the tea?
Yeah, well, I have some apple juice tonight.
All right, so we all set. So let's dive right away into it. And last time we finished the show talking about the Tree of Life.
Mm-hmm.
So one thing that I would really want to hear from your voice, because it is such a fantastic story, and I think that all of us, we are all dreamers, and that the story that you tell about the princess and how actually fit within the Tree of Life made it so nice to understand and like bring this dreamer side of us to into it, and then suddenly we are part of it. And so I really like it, and I took a great pleasure to read it, but if I could have your voice on it, then that would be my icing on the cake.
Okay. Well,
so tell us a little bit, what is this princess and what is the story of this princess?
Well, first of all, we're the princess in the classic fairy tale.
Mm-hmm.
I guess the Sleeping Beauty is probably the most classic fairy tale that this is the expression of. You know, Sleeping Beauty was a princess originally, you know, and she was the son of the daughter of a queen and a king, and that she had been cursed somehow to fall into this deep slumber, and the only thing that could get her out of this slumber was the kiss of a prince.
Mm-hmm.
And then the prince would kiss her, and then she would wake up and they would get married, and then she would become a queen, and then the prince would become a king.
Mm-hmm.
It's sort of like a two-part story. The first part of the story, you know, her creation comes from the king and through the queen, and she becomes a princess, and then she falls asleep and has amnesia, and then the second part of the story is the prince, the son of the king and queen, which in this story isn't really her brother, but but on one level it is, you know.
Yes.
And then he wakes her up and returns her to her former estate. Mm-hmm. And in the Kabbalah, one of the fundamental principles of the Kabbalah is the interest in, the study of, the reverence for, I guess, the great name Yod, He, Vav, He. Those are Hebrew letters. Yod, a He, Vav, and then a He final. And of course, this has been pronounced Jehovah, and has you know, taken the role of a downright deity in people that interpret the Bible that way. And that's okay to do that, but even deeper than that, it's this wonderful magical formula of life itself. And the Yod is like king, the king Yod, the father. And the He, first He, is Queen He. And then the Vav is the prince. And the He final is the princess. Now, if we try to explain or try to divide the universe as we know it and reality as we know it into these four convenient sections, okay, we are the ultimate reality anyway. The ultimate reality, the ultimate deity, would be the Yod, the father character, and everything else is going on in the mind, really, of the father. It's like this king who falls asleep and dreams that he's a queen who has fallen asleep, who is dreaming she is a prince who has fallen asleep and is dreaming he is a sleeping princess.
I see. Very cool.
And it is kind of very cool. And in this point of view, this way of looking at the divided universe, we are the sleeping princess.
I see.
And the earth plane is our environment. But there's something behind us. There's something more real than us. But we're unaware of it. It's like we've bumped our head somewhere. And not only are we asleep, but we're asleep and have amnesia.
Amnesia.
And so so many traditions and myths have this idea that we're exiles, that humanity is exiled from our original spiritual estate. That we're trapped in a prison of matter here, and that somehow or other we've got to escape, and a lot of the great religions of the world are trying to help us or give us different theories on how we escape this this prison of matter, and when in reality it's just a matter of learning how to wake up. Now, have you ever had a dream that was uncomfortable? Maybe not even a nightmare, but you had a dream where you're in just an uncomfortable situation.
Definitely.
And you finally come to grips with, you know, I'm just dreaming. I wish I could just wake up and go get a glass of water and
yes.
Stop all of it.
Yes. Yes, yes.
Okay, and, you know, it's when you finally come to that realization that you're dreaming, it really isn't hard to wake up, is it?
That's true.
And that's the same situation with us down here in this lowest world. Mm-hmm. That's the same thing with us as this sleeping princess.
Mm-hmm.
All it takes is a good, solid realization that, you know, I'm really just dreaming this this situation. There is something more true, something more awake, a greater spiritual reality. If I could just learn to wake up to it.
Okay, so that makes it pretty easy to understand in terms of theoretically.
Mm-hmm.
Now, in order to wake up, does the Tree of Life bring some mysterious answers, but still answers on how to wake up from the princess state to become the prince, and from the prince to the queen, and from the queen to reunite, I guess, with the king?
Well, Well, first of all, the Tree of Life provides the road map.
Okay, that's a map.
Yeah, it's a map, and excuse me, each one of us are in a unique situation, and each one of us needs to wake up in our own personal unique way.
Mm-hmm.
But there is this roadmap, and this wonderful roadmap is more or less based on a very, very fundamental numeric principle based on ourselves.
Mm-hmm.
And we call it the Tree of Life.
Mm-hmm.
And it's kind of, if we put the Yod-Heh-Vav-Heh mm-hmm. under a microscope,
mm-hmm.
we see the Tree of Life.
Okay.
And numerically, you know, Yod-Heh-Vav-Heh, there's four letters, so that's a number four. So if we put number four under a microscope,
mm-hmm.
1 + 2 + 3 + 4, we come
mm-hmm.
up with a number 10.
So
if
yes.
if we consider Yod-Heh-Vav-Heh, well, this is how we're going to look at the universe broken up into these four major sections. Well,
mm-hmm.
what happens when we put four under a microscope? Ooh, it
uh-huh.
comes out to 10.
Okay.
And
okay.
The Kabbalistic tradition is that we were made in the image of deity.
Okay.
And so when we go to a mirror and we look at ourselves, you know, we said, well, oh, holy cow, is that what deity looks like? You know, but the Kabbalists that wrote that were trying to tell us something.
Mm-hmm.
You know, what do we as humans have that you know, separates us from, say, the other beasts? And
mm-hmm.
I think we mentioned it briefly last week that
mm-hmm.
Our hands are unique, special hands that have four fingers, so there's the big number four,
mm-hmm.
With an opposable thumb, a master
mm-hmm.
finger that allows us to create things and fashion tools and make fire and things.
Mm-hmm.
Ask any, you know, anthropologist. Our thumbs are big things.
Mm-hmm.
So our thumb is it's almost like telling us there's Yod-Heh-Vav-Heh. There's a single deity, the
mm-hmm.
thumb, that works. It expresses itself in four,
yes.
against four other tools, if you will.
Mm-hmm.
And so the fact that we have 10 fingers all of a sudden makes 10 an incredibly heavy, special number in
mm-hmm.
the Hebrew Kabbalah.
Mm-hmm.
And it's the foundation for that Tree of Life, which, you know, it's very hard to do this on the radio, but
yes.
but the Tree of Life, if you can imagine a piece of paper, and at the top of the piece of paper you make a small circle,
mm-hmm.
and then below, to the right and left of that circle, you make two more circles.
Mm-hmm.
So those are the Sefer 1, 2, and 3.
Mm-hmm.
And then if you imagine placing a mirror under those that little triangle of circles,
mm-hmm.
you do three more circles underneath that almost reflect those
mm-hmm.
first three.
Mm-hmm.
And then you do another triangle of circles that are just like the second set underneath that. And then finally dangling at the bottom is one more circle.
Mm-hmm.
And that's how the ancient Kabbalists said, okay, we're going to try to express what the mind of God does from the very, very top of deity's idea of creation, which is number one, all the way down to the very, very bottom circle there, which is the earth where we are.
Okay, what a job.
It is. Well, you know, I wrote a book called The Chicken Kabbalah. And the Chicken Kabbalah, because I have to apologize for very serious, or to very serious Kabbalists when I say this, but the Kabbalah can be very, very dull.
Yes.
And it's exciting on a very deep spiritual level, but it puts you to sleep, and it seems very complex, and when you first start to study it, it's full of all of these Hebrew terms and archaic language, and I just wanted to, finally, when I, after years, I sort of had wrapped my mind around the practical aspects of the Kabbalah, and I just thought, wouldn't it be nice if somebody could just write something, a funny little thing that would explain it and entertain and keep you awake at the same time. And
but who else could have done it? Could have been doing that.
Well, thank you. And I've taught this at my Monday night class over for the last 30 years, and in order to keep people awake, I had to make the gimmicks that explain this, you know, goofier and goofier. And so I finally wrote this this book called The Chicken Kabbalah, and I wrote it kind of from the point of view of a rabbi that I wished I would have read in my first years of Kabbalah. And I came up with this idea that there must have been way, way back in the distant past a Kabbalistic university where young men or men or people were just allowed, maybe they got scholarships, I don't know, but they were allowed to just sit around and think about stuff all day. And one of the first things that they were told to think about was, if you were the one absolute deity, how would you go about creating the universe? How would you go, what would be the first thing you would do? And out of that chain of logic, from thinking just almost with your left hemisphere almost, is how would the great one turn itself into the many? How would it go about that? And so I sort of use this goofy exercise of a student, you know, sitting around saying, well, I'm one. I'm that first circle at the very top of the tree of life. Okay? I'm just a circle. That's me. There's no outside of me. There's nothing bigger than me. I'm it. But what am I?
Correct.
What the heck am I? I'm the only one, but I don't even know what that is. And this one couldn't, you know, hold a mirror up in front of itself and say, yep, because there is no outside of itself. So the only way that the one could become self-aware, which is the first act of creation, the one decided to become self-aware. And that's the big mystery. Why did the one want to become self-aware? You know, and nobody can answer that question. You know, but the first act was, well, how do I become self-aware? And so whoever was thinking up this concept had to think. Well, you know, here in this spiritual community that I'm in, the way we become self-aware is through reflection, through through meditation. And I don't care whether it's in the East or in the West or what culture you're talking about, all spiritual enlightenment starts with becoming, by going within yourself and finding the center of your own self. It's what every yogi does first step, you know? And so you can't hold a mirror outside of yourself, but you certainly can reflect inward. And so when the one of the Tree of Life wanted to become self-aware, it did just that. And it went inside itself until it found this inscrutable center, which must have been very mystical indeed when there's no limit to the circumference, you know. But it hit its dead center, and it realized what it was. And in doing so, created that circle number two, just below and to the right of our Tree of Life diagram. That's number two. And so number one is the one on top. Number two is the reflection. One is deity. Number two is the deity's reflection. And two concepts were then created. The concept of being, and then kind of the concept of not being, you know, the reflection. The reflection's not quite real. When we go and stand in front of a mirror, you know, and we move our arms around, our reflection looks very lively, you know?
Yes.
But it's not us.
Yeah.
Okay. So we are self, and the reflection is not self. And that's the same two concepts that were formed when that circle or sephira or emanation one and two were formed. But instantly, that third circle was created. Two and three were created at the same time, because you can't really have two without three. Because we've got the self at number one, the reflection or the not self at number two, then you've got the knowledge of the difference between one and two. Now it sounds kind of abstract, but in a way it's really simple.
Yes.
One, two, and three is just one thinking about itself.
Yes. That makes sense. That makes total sense.
And that's why we've got all of these holy trinities in every every culture. We've got some kind of form of holy trinity, as if everybody recognizes the fact that, okay, we can't think about the one big, all-encompassing absolute without thinking, dragging three things into the picture. And so on the Tree of Life, this is called the supernal triad.
Okay.
And everything is still abstract and very deity-wise up here. We're doing good just to think about it in these goofy terms that we're thinking about it right now, because it really is kind of high and abstract. But then the same forces, a momentum was created in that little scenario of one, two, three. All of a sudden, there was like a beat, a rhythm established in the universe. One, two, three. You know, one. Three. You almost want to go one, two, three again. You know, and that's just what happened. That supernal triad, one, two, and three. Now we can look at that as a unit. A Trinity unit, and the same thing that caused, you know, one to reflect itself, that same impulse continues, and the supernal triad Trinity unit then reflected itself. And now we've got those circles 4, 5, and 6.
Mm-hmm.
And that number 6 is a direct reflection of number 1.
Mm-hmm.
And yep. That that supernal triad, we could look I'll get to that in a second. And the same thing that caused number 3 to be instantly created,
mm-hmm.
when 1 reflected into 2, the same thing happens again with Trinity units,
mm-hmm.
and a second group of 3 is then replicated,
mm-hmm.
underneath that second group of 3, and now we've got our circles 7, 8, and 9.
Mm-hmm.
And everything would be just absolutely perfect. That tree of life would just be exquisitely perfect,
mm-hmm.
just as it is. But we've only got 9 things.
Yes.
And a tenth sephira, or a tenth circle, which is the earth, which is us, which
mm-hmm.
is the princess in our story,
mm-hmm.
is formed. And it's formed almost unnaturally. But of course, mm-hmm. it's very natural, you know.
Yes.
But it's almost as if this perfectly constructed universe of 3, 6, 9 trinities of trinities almost tries to outdo itself and squeezes out 1 more mm-hmm. reflection of.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, and that's the earth, and there's all sorts of Kabbalistic stories that concern the cosmos, the spiritual reality before the fall of man, and after the fall of man. It's mm-hmm. it's a before the fall of man, there wasn't really a man or an earth,
mm-hmm.
you know, but afterwards something happened. A wonderful yet catastrophic event that caused the creation of number 10.
Mm.
And that's why we find our all the way down in number 10, the pure light that was number 1 got filtered lower and lower frequencies,
mm-hmm.
cooled off into cooler and harder and thicker and denser and more corrupt, and until all the way down in number 6, all the way down in the material world, all the way down into you and me, light, the invisible, all pure light of number 1 has become trapped in matter, and we are the ultimate expression of it.
Mm-hmm.
So, there's a wonderful thing about being at the very bottom.
Yeah.
And the wonderful thing of being at the very bottom is that we have a little bit of absolutely everything from the top
mm-hmm.
to the very bottom. So, things in the middle don't have that. Things in the middle are too low to be high and too high to be
That's
low.
That's true. That's true.
So this is why when we look at these levels of consciousness, from the
uh-huh.
divine consciousness, the supreme consciousness of Godhead, way at number 1,
mm-hmm.
and here down in our groveling,
mm-hmm.
struggling, consciousness down here, we have enough material from the top to the bottom to enable ourselves to clone ourselves back
mm.
to Godhead.
Oh, it makes so much sense. Yeah. There you go. Perfect.
So that's why the traditions in almost everybody's religion says that even the angels above us
uh-huh.
would give everything to be the very lowest human being.
Oh.
Because we have the capability to bring ourselves to amplify those little bits of the very highest and everything in between, to amplify if we could figure out how to purify
mm-hmm.
ourselves. And I don't want to make that sound like it's a moral a moral thing. What we're doing is that we have the capability to raise our consciousness to that of the very highest level of consciousness.
Mm-hmm.
And the levels of consciousness between the highest and the lowest, we can quite easily and very artfully view metaphorically as increasingly higher and higher levels of spiritual beings.
Mm-hmm.
Above us, let's just be very, very simplistic and say there's God at the very top,
mm-hmm.
and then there's archangels, which
mm-hmm.
are very general and very, very powerful,
mm-hmm.
and there's just a few of those, but under each of those archangels are angels
mm-hmm.
that do a lot of their heavy lifting for them,
mm-hmm.
and then there's us.
Mm-hmm.
So there's the Yod, He, Vav, He.
I see.
Okay, deity, archangels, angels, mm-hmm. and people.
Mm-hmm.
And so on the tree of life, the king in our story,
mm-hmm.
the father that starts all of this this mischief, is seen as number two.
Two. Mm-hmm.
Sephira.
Mm-hmm.
And the mother is number three.
Mm-hmm.
So the ultimate male concept, the ultimate kind of positive elongating, concept is in number two, the father, the Yod there, and number three is just as profound, but number three is as long as number one can extend, number three can accommodate.
Mm-hmm.
And it's almost like this wonderful idea the father as number two, being the pure light in extension, the
mm-hmm.
the vehicle of the light that is really from number one, but it extends, and number three, the great mother, is like the night sky itself that can accommodate. It's a divine proactive emptiness.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, that can accommodate the father. It's, the terms are very, it gets very sexual,
Oh well,
yeah. But in a very, very divine way, this is lovemaking on a cosmic scale.
Mm-hmm.
And so the fairy tale, the Kabbalistic fairy tale, starts off with what is number two and number three,
mm-hmm.
the great father and the mother,
mm-hmm.
making love,
mm-hmm.
and in the wonderful moment of ecstasy, when this concept of three and concept of two get together, they in their ecstasy they forget their. Well, I won't say they forget. They wake up to the mm-hmm. fact that there really isn't a two and a three. There's only one.
Mm-hmm.
They wake up to that fact, that ecstasy,
mm-hmm.
Burns away that false sense of two-ness and three-ness.
Mm-hmm.
And in that ecstasy, they become number one. Okay, and they finally realize, and that's the bliss mm-hmm. of the highest level of consciousness. That is Godhead.
Mm-hmm.
That is the goal of all the yogis. That is the goal of all magicians and spiritual seekers everywhere. And these concepts are called different things in different cultures, obviously. Mm-hmm. But in the Kabbalah, the great mother and the great father, 2 and 3, meld in ecstasy and realize their ultimate oneness. But then, just like in everyday in our everyday world,
mm-hmm.
that didn't last. That doesn't last very long. Okay, and the story goes that after this wonderful moment, then it subsides, and just like men all over the world, the king rolls over and goes to sleep.
And smoke a cigarette.
After a cigarette. he rolls over and goes to sleep. And just like real life, the mother-to-be here, the wife, she, you know, trots back to her apartment there in number 3. And she doesn't go to sleep because she has become pregnant.
Mm-hmm.
And she gives birth. She gives birth to twins.
Mm-hmm.
A boy and a girl. And it this whole thing's going to sound a little sexist but that's how the Kabbalists view it. That's the
okay.
story. She has twins, and those two twins fall out below the supernal triad.
Mm.
And the prince falls into number 6.
Mm-hmm.
And actually the whole principality of the numbers of the prince is the circles 4, 5, 6, 7, and 8. That's his little principality.
Mm-hmm.
But he lives in number 6. Because he's the direct reflection of that wonderful number 1.
Okay, yeah.
And for some reason, in this story, the princess, who in a way is his twin,
mm-hmm.
she falls even further down the tree and all the way down to number 10 mm-hmm. and bumps her head and has amnesia.
Oh. What a tragedy.
It is a tragedy. And see, these are the court cards of the tarot we're talking about.
Yes.
Number 2 is all the kings, and number
mm-hmm.
3 are the 4, all the queens, and the
mm-hmm.
princes are number 6, and the princesses are number 10.
10.
And so here we are. We're sleeping beauties.
Mm-hmm.
Every one of us are programmed deep down inside to know that we've got a greater story going on here with our lives. You know?
Yeah.
We're
yeah.
royalty. We're spiritual
mm-hmm.
royalty.
Mm-hmm.
And we're down here in this repeating loop of soap opera episodes that we're in, knowing deep down inside that we're something very special, but not quite sure
mm-hmm.
what that is. But
mm-hmm.
now, go ahead.
Well, I was going to say that it does make it so much easier to understand, or may understand it, but to perceive more the meaning, global meaning of the cards now, that it is linked to the Tree of Life the way you explained it. Like, you know, telling that the all the twos are the kings, the threes are the... It does make, I mean, to me, at least, again, there's this three-dimensional, it's not like abstract, it became totally concrete
right.
now.
Well, see, that's the beauty of the cards,
mm-hmm.
because we've got all of these concepts that are just, you know, admittedly abstract, you know.
Yeah.
But we've got them as as little things that we can actually manipulate and
yes.
And organize and look at.
Yes.
And so obviously the you know the, all the aces are the number one.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. And the 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10s in every suit
mm-hmm.
are the sephira. And we've got four suits because there's a tree of life for every one of the letters Yod Heh Vav Heh.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And so we see how detailed we can get stuff, you know.
Yes.
But just the, you know the very broad point of view. Let's just talk about one tree of life at a time
yes.
to tell our story. So here we are down in number 10. And bouncing around in our soap opera, you know, mm-hmm. hoping for something greater, knowing that something greater is out there, but not knowing quite what it is. Now we've got our prince, and
mm-hmm.
I know this sounds incestuous because in a way the prince is our brother, but when we're speaking about cosmology like this, this isn't even illegal in a cosmic court of law.
Yes,
okay.
Yes.
So we've got this prince, and the prince is stuck.
Mm-hmm.
The prince is stuck in his principality. Prince is stuck in that level of consciousness. He's not whole.
Mm-hmm.
The prince is missing something, and he's missing a bride.
Mm-hmm.
The prince is not going to be complete until he gets himself the girl that'll make him complete.
Mm-hmm.
And so the prince knows about us down here in number 10.
Mm-hmm.
And the prince is already in love with us.
Oh.
Not only because of the pure pragmatic thing, he'll never be a king without us. You know? But he really does love us, because the entire
yes.
nature of all of this consciousness stuff
yes.
is love.
Uh-huh.
It's a real life force, like electricity.
Mm-hmm.
And so the prince, and we, every one of us has got a prince that is just hovering in another dimension that is so close to us that if we knew it, we could reach out and poke him in the eye right now.
Mm-hmm.
And the prince is looking for us and finding us and yelling, wake up, wake
mm-hmm.
up. What do I have to do to wake up?
Mm-hmm.
And the first thing and the easiest thing, as every, you know, Bhakti yogi will tell you, is the
mm-hmm.
first thing to do to wake up is to gain the ability to fall hopelessly, helplessly, sloppily, one-pointed in love with deity.
Mm.
To be love, pure openness, pure
mm-hmm.
devotion, pure surrender, if you will, to the concept of God, wanting God so much that it is like an amplified yearning of a lover for the beloved. That's the kiss of the prince. And that's the natural step for waking up. And in every culture has a different name for this. In ceremonial magic, it's called knowledge and conversation of the Holy Guardian Angel.
I was going to say, is that the Holy Guardian Angel
yes,
right there?
Yes, it is.
Okay.
But everybody else's culture has something. I was raised in Columbus, Nebraska,
uh-huh.
and I was raised a Methodist. But now and again, with friends, I would sneak into a Roman Catholic Mass.
Mm-hmm.
Because there's, you know, there's really not much sexy ritual going on in the Methodists.
Mm-hmm.
You know, God love them. There's a lot of singing, but there's not incense and smell clothes and I love the ritual, and I'm so old that in those days it was in Latin, and it was so beautiful. And there are a lot of German and Polish immigrants in Columbus. There was in those days. So a lot of these little old Polish ladies, and they still had the scarf, the babushka over their heads, and you could tell these gals were, they're 90, 100 years old, and they come into mass, every day, to take communion. And I was sitting up front one week, and it was at an early mass, and I went to school. And I watched this toothless little old lady. She couldn't have been more than 4.5 feet tall. She was like a hobbit. And she was kneeling. She was taking communion and kneeling at the altar rail there. And the priest came up to her to put the host in her mouth. And her eyes were nailed. Her eyes were just completely focused on the large crucifix, behind the altar.
Uh-huh.
And the ecstasy that I saw in her eyes was, I've never seen anything like that in a human being before in my life.
Wow.
It was like this woman was more alive than any other person that I've ever seen up to that point. And I knew, and I looked up at what she was looking at, that horrible, tortured, very grim-looking, crucifix and a bloody Jesus hanging on it and everything else. And I knew at that moment that she was married to that. Whatever the essence of that crucifix was, I knew that she was the bride of that, and that someday I wanted to feel like that, like that, because I thought to myself, that is more alive than any other. So she was seeing the Holy Guardian Angel, what I call the Holy Guardian Angel, in her devotion to Christ, and through her repeated use of this marvelous Eucharistic ritual. And I'm sure she and the church and everyone else would just be very mad at me for saying, but that was real magic. That was real magic. And so what was happening there was she had been moved from number 10 to number 6. And she was on her way. She had achieved cosmic consciousness, what the New Agers call it, and what lots of people call Christ consciousness. She achieved it. And that's why all the number sixes in the tarot are wonderful cards too. Because that's where they are at. And then there's a further magical crisis after that point, whereby in the fairy tale, you and the fairy prince, you and he get married, and you become pregnant, making you a mother, making him a father, putting you back on number 3, him back on number 2, and after a 20-minute pause and a cigarette, you get together, and the whole thing starts all over again.
That is so... It is very, very, very interesting. It is very... It's fascinating. And it makes it so, accessible suddenly. Again, one thing that I want to hear, this woman who had her life obviously devoted to that, do you feel that there is a ritual that has to be going on for a long period of time to achieve that that communion? Or, you know, do people, you know, who have never really do it regularly or don't even actually are not totally aware of what it is, have that communion?
Yes, probably most people that have that experience don't have it as the result of any kind of a ritual.
Yes.
Or don't have it. I'm confident in saying that most people that undergo the experience don't think of it in these terms.
Mm-hmm.
At all.
Mm-hmm.
But this is kind of the whole job of Kabbalistic study. Mm-hmm. is to try to achieve a level of understanding.
Yes.
About things that happen, you know, naturally in the world, and
mm-hmm.
at least we have a language and a vocabulary to discuss these things.
Mm-hmm.
So,
go ahead.
I had an experience in Oregon when I was a young man. I might not have been 21. I was probably 19 or or 20. And I was studying yoga,
mm-hmm.
And Eastern mysticism, but I was still a kid. You know, I wasn't a real yogi yet. You know? And I just sort of fancied myself a yogi,
mm-hmm.
but. One evening, I sat down, or kind of, we had a cabin, and it had electricity, and we had a record player, and I was playing the Beatles, All You Need Is Love.
Mm-hmm.
And I was just sitting in my, half lotus, well, I think I'll meditate while I listen to this. And even though it was in the hippie days, I wasn't smoking anything, or this is just me. And during the early phrases of All You Need Is Love, you know, nothing you can do that isn't done, nothing you can see that isn't shown, all of those sort of, you know, Zen-like little sayings, all of a sudden it seemed like the Beatles were the voice of God,
uh-huh.
speaking directly to my soul. Okay, and the more I thought that, the more personal every word that they said
mm-hmm.
was. And before that song was over, I had achieved or experienced what I can only describe as what I've read. What the experience of samadhi is, I completely lost all sense of separateness from the universe. I was the wall-to-wall consciousness of the universe. It was totally blissful. I would say I was in bliss, but I lost my eye. Okay?
Uh-huh.
There wasn't any outside of me.
Uh-huh.
It was just this, it was, nothing like that had ever happened, and I had to forcibly bring myself back
mm-hmm.
because I had stopped breathing.
Oh, yeah, that can be a problem.
That was a problem. That was going to be a problem, and somewhere, not from me, but from this crust of what I think I always used to think was me, there was a mechanism that says, you better breathe now, you know. And for a minute, I said, well, you know, if I die, I want to die like this. You know, I want to feel like this. But I had to forcibly bring myself out of it. Now, I hadn't gone through any ritual. I hadn't gone through, you know, any set of things. I didn't identify that as me moving from 10 to 6. I didn't think of it in terms of tarot cards or anything. And it's only been in the years after that
mm-hmm.
when I've seen, oh, how wonderful the Kabbalah can explain
mm-hmm.
and kind of give voice to this experience mm-hmm. that otherwise I have absolutely no way of describing it otherwise.
Mm-hmm. It does, and thank you for taking your time again for to make it so so explainable, so approachable tonight for us. And then somewhere the tarot after that is just a matter of, you know, like taking the tree of life with what you brought, you know, to our consciousness and just applying the game to it.
Absolutely, and everybody applies it in a different way.
Yes, yes.
So that's kind of the wonderful thing about the Kabbalah is it's your Kabbalah.
Yes.
And
yes.
Nobody else's.
Yes.
And you may have things in common with other people's Kabbalah, but if you just got the Tree of Life and a deck of tarot cards,
yes,
I'm sorry, you're already a Kabbalist.
There you go.
Good luck.
Fantastic. That is that is so great. I'm so glad we did a second show with you, because I think that the first show we had like about 6 minutes to explain the Tree of Life. It's like, ooh, gee, that's not going to be enough. And I think that it was actually, and obviously was divinely planned, but I think it just make it so clear, at least for me, hopefully for our listeners as well. And thank you. Well, thank you for your time, and thank you for sharing that so easily.
Well, you're very welcome, and I'm sorry I rambled on there.
No,
I took up all of our time, and we didn't get to those other things we wanted to
talk
about.
And then that means that we're going to have to do it again.
Oh, good.
We will have Lon again on our show. I promise to give you more on cards, on thought, tarot, and on explanation about it. Because it's just a fascinating and complex world that of course that 2 hours it are definitely not enough to cover it, but it's so easy to dive into it and just get hooked to it that I'm sure more than one listeners wants to learn more. So we're going to be planning to have Lon again on our show soon, and then I will be posted everything on our show preview. And you just have to click on bbsradio.com/consciousfitness Divine Body, and then you will be able to see when it will be again on our show. What do you think about that, Lon?
Oh, I can't wait.
All right, super. I thank you so much. We are all of our time. It's already been 55 minutes of bliss that we have. That, there you go. There is our bliss. And and then thank you so much for being here with us. You, Lon, of course, and our listeners, and I'll see you probably next week, same time, and for a guided meditation this time. It's going to be very interesting. So don't miss the next show. Thank you so much. Good evening. Bye.
Somewhere in my heart, we'll never be apart.